You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And today, we're doing something a little bit special. We teased it last week, and what we're doing is a two-part commentary, something we've never done before. And that two-part commentary is Season 4, Episode 18 and 19, The Killing Game.
Yes, this is a two-parter that I think stands out, but is among another two-parter that many people know very well. Of course, Year of Hell is what I'm talking about. And So I feel like it kind of just has to take second place among Season 4 two-parters. However, we're going to examine this baby as we watch it and tell you why it is darn freaking good.
And as always, we try to make it as entertaining as possible, even if you're not watching the episode. Now, this is made so that you can watch the episode and listen to us, but there are plenty of listeners out there who just listen to us in their cars. Now, hopefully they're not watching it while they're in their cars.
Well, I hope they're not driving and watching it and listening, because you should really be focusing on your driving. Now, if you're the passenger, fine, do whatever you want. But if you're driving, please be safe. Don't do that.
And here at TTJ, we are all about safety. So
that's right. There's your PSA for the week.
Now, here is the summary that Netflix puts it as. After Voyager is captured by the Hirogens, the ship is turned into a massive holodeck so that the Hirogens can hunt members of the crew.
Dun, dun, dun!
Now, just to go over the rules, what we do is we say 3, 2, 1, and hit play. So have it queued up with Netflix... I don't think it's on Hulu, on iTunes, wherever it is, on your DVD or however else you got it.
Right. We really don't care. We say it every time, but we just want to reiterate, if you're watching Star Trek, that's cool with us.
That's all that matters, is that you're actually watching it. So here we go. 3, 2, 1, play.
Off we go. Now, I do believe this is the first and only time we say, see Kate Mulgrew in Klingon makeup.
I think you're right. It was, I remember, and I guess get your shots ready. Like when I was watching this at home and my parents were with me, like I think I was cooking something in the kitchen and the episode started and I was a little late. And my dad's just like, "Hey, you better get in here. Janeway's in some sort of Klingon makeup and we don't know why."
Well, that's what makes this a really good teaser, right? Is
yeah.
We know it's Janeway. We can tell, even though she is Klingonized here. But why is she a Klingon? What in the world happened?
I love teasers like that. I love it that when you have no idea what's going on and you're just thrust into the situation.
Right. You've got to find out, right? So you have to keep watching. And then, of course, the Hirogen are also in Klingon costumes, so... what is going on here? I'm so confused.
See, okay, I always wondered about this, because the Hirogen, you know, like, they fatally wound them, but then the Doctor brings them back to life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, so yes, there was a few casualties, but you'd think there would be a whole lot more, because what if someone's just getting overzealous and then, bam, they just decapitated someone?
Right, well, you would think a race like the Hirogen, who are so about the hunt, you think, yeah, their adrenaline would get them going so much that they would go a little too far, right? That's a really good point. I mean, there should have been some deaths.
Yeah, they stab somebody in the heart, or they, like, or, like, what if they're maimed, you know? Like, I don't know, I just, obviously this is network TV, so it can't get too graphic, and it's Star Trek, and so we don't want too terribly much going on, or like that we have to see too terribly much. Like, you know, with Janeway when she got stabbed right now, it was below the camera line.
Right, going, we didn't see the entry wound. Right.
Yeah.
We just saw her lose consciousness and fall to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keeps that family friendly rating.
Exactly. I guess maybe, though, you could look at it this way, where it's a sign of their skill to not kill their prey, but yet immobilize them or something. I don't know.
Hmm. Maybe. But isn't the point to kill them?
Well, I think it's...
I mean, I know this is practice.
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing, is that, like, this is a trial run to see if this could be introduced into the Hirogen culture.
Right. Yeah, that is the whole idea with this holodeck stuff. But as good as the doctor is,
yeah,
it is a little surprising that he manages to bring everybody back from these devastating injuries with no real consequences whatsoever.
Yeah, I can't remember what the death toll was, but I think the doctor says it here pretty soon.
Oh, okay, so people did die.
Yeah, I think there was casualties. All right, yeah.
I'm not remembering that part.
Yeah, I just remember there wasn't that much.
Okay, and now she is de-Klingonized. I wonder what Kate Mulgrew thought about having to go through the makeup process. Because she didn't really have to do that much that often.
No, I can't think of any other time, really, where she had to wear a lot of makeup on Star Trek.
Well, one thing comes to mind, which is Course Oblivion, where their faces are kind of melting off. That had to have been a lengthy makeup job.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I remember there was a story about how I think some characters who didn't have to do a lot of makeup had to do a lot of makeup on Deep Space Nine, and all they were doing was complaining constantly. Just like, they just couldn't handle it. They were whining. They were complainers. They were whiny actors. And then Michael Dorn walks by and goes, seriously? Really? Really,
yeah,
you're going to complain?
Yeah, that's what came to my mind, too, is Michael Dorn was like, shut up.
Yeah, that's essentially how it went. I feel like, I think Nana Visitor was the, like, and I love Nana Visitor, don't get me wrong, but every story I've heard from people who were involved with DS9 on DS9 or have secondhand stories said that Nana Visitor was the biggest whiner when it came to her having to do anything uncomfortable, whether it was costumes or makeup. And Michael Dorn was always the one who goes, like, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, and he rightfully has that honor because he's done Worf for how many years at that point?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. And the latex irritated his skin. So he has skin problems on top of just having to endure the makeup day in and day out. And so, I mean, it really, he did it at a big cost.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's got sensitive skin. That latex really irritated it. He had to do something for his poor face to keep it in shape.
Now, okay, so we have this this white outfit
that
Janeway is wearing. And so the people at home who can't see it or don't remember it, it is a just imagine a white tux. That is what Janeway is wearing.
Yes, with sequins on the flaps. I don't know what you actually call them. And a bow tie. An off-white bow tie. Looks very nice on her. I know this is a favorite of Lori's.
Oh, yeah? Lori likes this one?
She loves the tux. Yes.
Now, this was based off of something. This was based off of an old black and white movie, and I cannot remember for the life of me what it was based off of.
You're right, and I can't think of it either. And we should have done our homework, apparently.
I know. I feel bad.
Yeah. Speaking of tuxes, Tuvok is also wearing a very awesome-looking tux. Has a beautiful black bow tie and the little black on the edge there. The flaps and black buttons. I don't know. It just looks really nice on him. I don't know. The whole costuming in this episode, they really went gangbusters and made it authentic, I think. And then look at Jeri Ryan.
Yeah, she's...
She's looking beautiful in that 1940s hair.
It was Marlene Dietrich. That's who it was.
Okay. In
That's
what
was.
Production?
Oh, I just remember her name.
Okay, fine. Well, look that up, people, and get an image, and you'll understand what in the world we're talking about. Because I've seen that image before, and it's just a, you know, like, equal comparison. One and the same.
It would be, I think it's Morocco in 1930.
Okay. All right. Now, one thing I didn't know until fairly recently was that Jerry Ryan, with the incredibly stressful schedule that Star Trek is, and this being her first season, she got sick a lot during this first season because she wasn't getting enough sleep. She was working her tail off. And, of course, Seven of Nine is very heavily featured because we're getting to know this new character. And so she was never really getting much of a break. I guess she had all sorts of ailments like bronchitis and, you know, colds, the flu, you name it. And so to think that she can sing so beautifully while she's so beaten down and sick really amazes me.
Yeah, she was a trooper for everything that they put her through. I mean, like the, like, cause she was focused on so heavily, like you said, in the first season that she was in. I mean, you know, most of the time you think that they would, you know, focus on her heavily at the beginning and then like give her some, like give the character some rest and like, you know, like ease her into it. No, mm-hmm. That was not the case with Jerry Ryan. Like,
not
it was
at all.
Both feet running. Yeah.
Yeah, they seriously did. And they didn't ever really give her that much of a break for the rest of the series. I mean, Seven is very heavily featured from seasons 4 through 7 entirely.
Yeah. Now, I feel like Star Trek has this... Star Trek loves showing Nazis, and they love showing aliens in Nazi uniform.
Well, that certainly became the case, because Enterprise did the same thing. But if I'm recalling correctly, this is the first time we'd seen this in a good long while, right?
I always feel like there's more, but maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
No, I think it's the fact that Enterprise did it too, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh God, oh, they're doing the Nazi thing again?
I guess I'm remembering Spock and Kirk in Nazi uniforms in TOS, so technically Spock is an alien.
Right. So. Yeah, but that was way back then, and then TNG didn't really do a whole lot with Nazis, right?
No, I don't think so. I think you're right.
Okay, yeah. The Earl Grey guys can call me out if I'm wrong about that. But this was the first time we saw aliens in Nazi uniforms in quite a while. And
well,
so
way,
I guess it
way to crap
thing.
On my point instead of just saying, yeah, that's crazy.
I'm sorry. I'll not think next time.
I love that. I love this in a... I love how she hits that when he goes, he's like, the warp plasma, blah, 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 has become unstable. And she goes, what's he talking about?
What is that noise coming out of your mouth?
I love that in holodeck and alien stuff. Like when they say something and they're not supposed to say something 24th century.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just always think that's fun.
I like the fact that they call them out on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also makes me think, well, I guess that would make sense because she's not a holodeck character. Like she wasn't made by a holodeck, because I feel like in the past we've seen that when somebody says something like that in front of a holodeck character, they just are programmed to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like,
true.
Or when somebody walks, like it's kind of depends on the writers of that day, because like
yeah.
somebody walks in with a uniform on, and sometimes they ignore it, other times they're like, who's the guy in the pajamas?
Right. Yeah, you're right. It is completely subjective to the scene. And I guess part of this simulation is to brainwash them to an extent so that they really believe they're in World War II Germany.
Mm-hmm. I love the World War II era. I know it's weird to think... I've always thought it was weird to nostalgically think about such a horrible time in our history.
Mm-hmm.
But at that same time, so much happened. So many countries were involved. And it was a turning point, you know, not just for the country, but for the world. Obviously, that's why we called it World War II.
Yes.
And I've always been fascinated about it in from a historical standpoint. And I love it when I see shows deal with that topic on a fictional level.
Yeah. So this is a bonus for you then?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I can totally appreciate that, because like you said, it is a very important part of our history. It's not exactly the happiest moment in our
yeah.
history, but it had such an impact on the whole world that we can't ignore it. And they really did try to be as authentic as they could be for this episode, because I think Brannon Braga loves the World War II era, and he was just dying to find a way to do this. And it never really, like, they never really found the opportunity until this episode came along. And so he was really gung-ho about it and really wanted to make it as authentic as possible. Now, you've probably studied World War II a little more than I have. Do you think that they pulled that off successfully? Or is there some things in here that kind of, like you kind of know that your detector goes off and says, no.
Well, okay, here's the thing, is that this is such a baseline level that I never really looked for it, because they don't, it's a TV show, you know, set in the 24th century on a starship where an alien race is recreating it, an alien race that has no history to World War II. And so it's just, there's so many layers of fiction on top that it doesn't matter if it's accurate or not. You know what I'm saying? It's not like this show is set in World War II. It's not like this show is trying to recreate the World War II era for you. This is on a holodeck, on a starship, in the 24th century, in a 1990s TV show. So I don't know. Like, I feel like, long story short, I think it's good enough.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Now, here's one thing that I never thought I would ever see on Star Trek, and that is Neelix riding a bike.
How perfect is that?
Isn't it cute?
Neelix riding a bike in France with some baguettes in the back of his cart. That's just so cool.
I know. I don't know. I think it's adorable. I love the little scarf that he's wearing. It looks really good on him. He should have done more scarves.
It's really funny because, you know, like when you see the Herosians in the Nazi uniforms walking around France, you're just like, okay, that's super out of place. But for some reason, when I see Neelix in that outfit riding the bike, it just fit.
He belongs in there.
He just belongs there. It's just so crazy. It's so weird.
And they just poured out a beautiful bottle of wine onto the ground. So sad. What a waste.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I did the last time I tried wine.
You're not much of a wine drinker, huh?
Oh my gosh, no, I've tried twice now, and each time I'm just like, oh god, how can people drink this?
Now, did you try red or white or both?
Both.
And you didn't like either?
No, no, oh my gosh. Oh, okay. I don't know how people drink alcohol. I just don't.
So it's not limited just to wine, it's all of it.
No, like in the past couple of years, I've tried different types of alcohol. I've tried cocktails, I've tried wine, I've tried margaritas, and just every single, like, because that was the first time I drank, was like a year ago or 2 years ago. That was the first time I took a sip of alcohol.
Oh wow, you really waited.
I'm glad that I waited, because I was just like,
I don't know. I'm learning that I am gaining a appreciation for sweeter wine, table wine as they like to call it.
Okay.
I cannot do more bitter red wine, and white wine I'm not really sure yet. But you know me, I love my vodka.
I do know that. Now, can we please talk about how cute B'Elanna's hair is in this?
Yeah, I figured that was inevitable. Yes.
Like the ruffles, the weaves, I don't even know what you would call it, but just that total 1940s bob that's going on in her hair is just so, so adorable for that character.
It really is. It's a good look for her. And actually, I really love just what they did with everybody. Hair-wise and costume-wise. I think I already mentioned that part, but the hair is really great. Everybody looks so good with 1940s hair. It's just this awesome... Do I want to say timeless look? Because it was 1940s, but it just works. It looks so nice.
I think it's a throwback that works, even today.
Fair enough.
Now, okay, here's the thing, and this is where I'm thinking about it too much. In the opening scene, we see Janeway in Klingon gear.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a human that they wanted to make look like a Klingon. And later on, we see Neelix with Klingon makeup on. Now, why didn't they make them look human on Earth?
Yeah, why doesn't Neelix look like a human?
Yeah, in 1940s, they didn't have Talaxians, they didn't have Vulcans, they didn't have half Klingons. So if they were that intent on making it that realistic and have them blend in, why didn't they make everybody a human?
You're right. And I'm sure budgetarily that would have maybe cut down costs a little bit. And I'm sure Roxanne Dawson and Ethan Phillips would have loved a break.
Yeah, because think about that. We would have seen, especially those two, we've only seen that once before. We only saw Roxanne Dawson without her makeup once.
Right. Even Tim Russ without ears.
Yeah, hey. Even that would be weird. And so it'd be interesting because, you know, I think that was a missed opportunity.
It was. Because the only time we've really seen Ethan Phillips without makeup, I think, is in First Contact. you know, in Star Trek, of course.
In Star Trek, yeah, yeah. I think you're right.
And, of course, we just had the reveal of Roxanne Dawson's in-real-life pregnancy, which they transferred to the character B'Elanna is playing in this simulation. And we will find out why.
That's the first time we see it.
Yes.
But it's not the first time... How do I phrase that? It was even though this was the first time that we saw her with her real pregnancy, I always thought it was fun later on. I think it was Renaissance Man where she had her fake pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
and then they it was the doctor pretending to be B'Elanna, but he forgot to put on her belly.
Right. Yeah. Like,
and for some reason, that those two moments are always kind of conjoined to me.
That's interesting. I've never really made that association, but that's, you know, I'm going to have to watch these episodes kind of back to back now and then make that association, put it in my fanon, as Philip Gilfus would say.
My fanon.
Mm-hmm. Fanon, headcanon.
Now, you know, we were talking about Nazis in Star Trek earlier. This guy, this actor, was played a Nazi again in Enterprise.
Yes, he did.
Now, how is that going to make you feel as an actor?
Typecast. That's yeah. how it's going to make you feel.
And he was also one, the Borg.
Yes, he was. Yeah, yeah. Very hard to recognize him under all that Borg makeup, but it was the same guy. Good actor.
Yeah. He plays the perfect Aryan. I love that this Erosion, the Alpha, is he's talking with a hologram character, and he's like asking, he's trying to do cultural research through talking to a fake person.
It's kind of like learning a foreign language by going to the country of its origin and then just speaking among the natives and figuring it out as you go.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's a better way of looking at it than I was making fun of it, but I like your way better.
I mean, it's not necessarily the most ideal way because you're going to stumble and make mistakes and all that. But, I mean, if you really want to be thrown to the wolves, that's what you do.
Okay. All right. So the Hiroshin just grabbed the Nazi's throat, you know,
yeah,
like,
chokehold.
Pissed him off. I want to know, you always see this in movies and TVs where the bad guys treat their soldiers poorly, and like whenever in American movies it's always like they're always buddy buddy with their soldiers, or they're, you know, they're hard as nails just to get them to rise up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like in the it, with the bad guys, you know, whether it's like Russians or Germans or whatever era of time you're looking at, they're always the ones who are like are smacking them around, shooting them for talking out of place and everything like that.
Right.
I want to know how much of that actually happened.
Yeah, me too, now that you bring it up. Because neither one of us has a military background.
Right.
We don't really know what happens behind the scenes. I'm sure there's people who have either been in the military or are in the military who've been in conflict before. Write into the show and let us know how much truth there is in that.
Well, I mean, like, as I was saying, like, it was always the bad guys. And so the people we would have contact with would be the good guys.
From our point of view, if you want to get really technical, but I mean, I'm sure there's tactics that, you know, the higher ranking officers use to rally the troops and all that. And I don't know.
Now, this is something, though, that you asked me about accuracy, the collection of art that this Nazi guy, the B'Elanna's boyfriend, is bragging about. That is a very real thing that happened in World War II.
Okay.
The Nazis stole lots and lots of art.
Okay. I didn't really know that. Is it because Hitler liked to paint?
Well, it was like Hitler did have a massive art collection, but it was kind of a spoils of war type thing. Like it wasn't just Hitler. It wasn't Hitler grabbing it for himself necessarily. I mean, that did happen. But a lot of Nazi commanders and even a few Americans, you know, took what they wanted. When it came to art, like sculptures and paintings and things like that, whether it was from private collections or even museums. And sometimes it was hard. There was even decades that went by. And even today, I mean, like there are paintings that aren't in the hands of its rightful owners. Because of World War II.
Interesting. Okay. This is not something I ever knew about.
Yeah.
How interesting. And that actually is very fitting for the Hirogen because of the way they have their trophies.
Oh, yeah. Displayed. I didn't think about that.
That, yeah. I don't know if that was an intentional parallel or not, or if they were just going for World War II authenticity, but it really works.
Yeah, I think it works either way, yeah. See, this always bothered me because they just gunned down Neelix and Seven.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, they did it just because they were bored. They're just like, yeah, let's shoot them down. But like, what was the thrill in that? Because it lasted like 30 seconds.
Right. That's like a crack high, you know? A lot of work for very little payoff. Not that I would know, but from, you know, I did addiction training in college. I understand what drugs do to the body. Not from personal experience. It's just very, very intense at the time, but it's like 5 seconds of pure bliss and then you're done. And then you got to chase the next time. Which I guess, maybe that's what the Hirogen do. They're drug addicts for hunting.
They're hunting highs, yeah.
Hunting highs, yeah.
I love it. Okay, I love the Doctor in this episode. We don't see him too terribly much.
Mm-mm.
But I love the Doctor in here because he... Think about the position that he's in. Like, his crew is being mutilated and harmed beyond measure constantly.
Yeah.
And there's nothing he can do about it. And it's his mandate to repair them. But mm-hmm. it's just... he's. It's also a mandate for the Doctor to help prevent harm as well.
Right. And he can't really do that here.
And there's nothing he can do. And I just love how indignant he is in this episode. He's like, yes, I'm going to help these people, but I hate you for it. And I just love right. how you get to see it.
Yes, I love the fact that he pushes back. You know, yeah. he's going to do his job, obviously, because he's got to save them. That's his job. But he's going to do it begrudgingly because he knows there's going to be a next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like her voice.
Yeah, well, she does have a very nice voice.
Yeah, it was surprising. And this is the first time we hear it, right?
Yes. Yes, it was.
And then there's...
Mr. And then there's poor Harry on the bridge, stuck on the bridge, missing all the excitement, or is he?
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, apparently Garrett Wong did not appreciate him being left out of the festivities in the holodeck for this episode.
Yes, I think he really wanted to get in costume and romp around with everybody else.
But the thing is, though, is that I love that, like, when we, you know, when the camera swings and pans to reveal Kim, mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course that makes sense.
That's what I think, too. I mean, he is the choice because he has the expertise to make all of this happen, and he is just as much a prisoner as the rest of the crew, maybe even more so, just because he knows what's happening and he's enabling it and he has no choice, kind of like the Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. And I like that the Doctor and Kim, when they were, you know, kind of joined together. And I felt like Kim is, yeah, he's an ensign, but he's a leader. And so he's a bridge officer. And so he's able to kind of round together everybody, including this crewman that we see in front of us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, it just, I don't know, it just made sense. I mean, he got a lot of screen time, just him, with just him being the main character. So, I mean, I guess you could, it like, the producers made it sound like he was angry, but I just think, like yeah, it would be fun to be, you know, dressed up in World War II gear and everything like that.
Sure.
But you're getting a lot more screen time because of it.
It's true. I mean, Harry's a very important part of this story, so your character's being heavily featured. Yes, you are stuck on the bridge like you are every week. I get that.
Yeah.
But it's not like he's just plucked there because they don't know what else to do with him. He serves yeah. a very integral role.
Exactly. Exactly. And also, who else would it be? Like, B'Elanna? But then again, she's pregnant. Like, the right. actress is pregnant. And so you'd be severely limited in using her in this fashion.
You would. She'd have to hide behind the console all the time.
Right.
And, yeah, no, Harry... It makes a lot of sense that it fell to him. It just, that feels right.
Yeah.
Sorry, Garrett Wong. I'm sure you were bummed, yeah. but.
yeah. Sorry, but we disagree with your feelings.
Yeah. We are invalidating your feelings. That's not very nice of us.
That's all right.
Well, I know he's listened to the podcast before.
I didn't know that.
Yes. He listened to our episode about Harry.
No.
He did.
Did he like it?
I think so, because he retweeted it.
He retweeted it. Doesn't mean he listened to it.
Well, no, he did. He had some feedback on it. This was a long time ago.
I don't remember this at all. What do you
think? It was way more than a year ago, I think, like when he really started getting going on Twitter. Somebody mentioned our podcast, and he mentioned something that definitely gave me the impression that he listened to it, because he would have otherwise not been able to make that statement without having listened to it. You know, it wasn't one of those things like, oh, you're promoting Harry Kim, that's cool, retweet. No, he said something that he actually went through and listened.
Oh, geez, I hope I was nice.
I think I actually went back and re-listened to our episode just to see what we said. I don't think it was that bad.
Okay, because I like Harry Kim, but I know that there are times when I probably have made fun of some Harry Kim episodes.
We all do. It's kind of, I mean, we titled that episode The Toby of the Delta Quadrant, which he might have not appreciated very much if he watches The Office. But I mean, in a way, it's kind of hard not to rip on Harry. He is the whipping boy, very much like he is in this episode.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to go back and listen and so I can feel better about myself. But okay, so to go back to what was happening on screen, like you have the alpha and the beta arguing with each other. And he said, he's like, yeah, there's something I want to try, a most violent era in their history. And he turns the laptop around, or whatever you want to call it, and it's the Borg. And he's talking about Wolf 359.
Yeah.
And I like, it's, even though it's a fictional battle, like inside, like the fan in me was kind of like, ooh, too soon. Like,
ooh, you ripped off that Band-Aid. Oh.
Yeah.
Ouch. Now, I like the way that they've redone the Ready Room. There are new decorations in the Ready Room, Hirogen style. There's trophies. The lighting is darker.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's carcasses and weapons all over the place.
He pulled a nightingale.
Yeah, you're right. Yes. Good pull.
Yeah, speaking of Harry Kim.
Yeah, yeah. Another one where he's heavily featured, but...
Yeah, yeah. I love... Also, I keep forgetting about this, but I love the continuity with this episode and then Flesh and Blood later on.
Oh, yes.
About how this was the precursor to that. Like, if this didn't happen, Flesh and Blood wouldn't have happened. And I feel like that's... Flesh and Blood was a two-parter where the idea was much better than the execution.
Well, that's a lot of Voyager episodes, unfortunately. They had wonderful ideas.
Yeah. But I felt like this one, The Killing Game, both parts one and two, were great idea, great execution.
Yes, I do agree with that. And especially after coming off of Year of Hell and having an intense season as it is, I'm amazed that they did such a great job with this, because in the notes on Memory Alpha, you can read just how exhausted everyone was, from set designers to the actors, everybody. They were working their freaking tails off. So to do another two-parter, they're like, how are we going to make this happen? Yeah. And then they did. They pulled it out.
And it worked.
Kudos to them. And it's so good.
Oh, man, can Jerry Ryan do a close-up?
She is awfully nice to look at. Yes.
Middle school Tristan's just coming out right now.
I'm sure the only thing better for you would be a Bellana close-up.
Either is fine.
Really? You're that indifferent?
No. Wait. Don't make me choose.
All right, fine.
No, like of the two characters, Bellana's by far my favorite.
Yes.
I'm just saying that Jerry Ryan has a nice close-up. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's kind of why I'm giving you some heck about it. Just because I know how much you love Roxanne Dawson and Bellana Torres. And yes. Oh, you can see that Jerry Ryan has her ears double-pierced in that close-up.
I never noticed that before. That's so great.
If you're watching with us, you can see two distinct little holes in her ear.
That's funny. I love seeing that stuff. I know that there are some crazy people out there who are like, well, she wouldn't have had her ears pierced if she was actually in the 24th, or she was a Borg in the 24th century. They should have covered that up. And I'm like, really? Come on.
Well, yeah. And I don't think they were really thinking too much about those teeny, teeny details.
I know.
Especially with the resolution they were shooting at in the day. I mean, if and when Voyager does come out on Blu-ray, think about how much more detail you're going to see. Things like that.
Yeah.
Things they never thought we would see.
And that's fun to me, like seeing that stuff.
Yeah, it's fun, you guys. Just let loose and enjoy it.
Yeah, I've never once I was just like, oh, stupid producers. No, I've just gone, oh, hey, look at that. And then you move on.
Yeah, like we just did. See how easy it is?
Oh, I forgot. Okay, so, like, yeah, she sings Old Black Magic here. But then Doctor and the Kim Tones sings this in a later episode.
Yes, they do.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Nice little callback.
I'll never get tired of him saying that. Harry Kim and the Kim Tone.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love the way he says that.
Ooh, how embarrassing. She forgot her lines.
Oops. Should have rehearsed more.
You think if only the Doctor could have like peeked in like to the holodeck before he deactivated her whatever, her neural implant. Like, it's like, oh, she's singing a song. Let me wait a little bit.
Or would he just step in and like once she forgot the line, he steps in and he starts singing.
Ha! Yeah.
Take five. I got this.
He would. I've got this. Don't worry.
Yeah.
That old black magic. I just imagine him like snapping his fingers. Just,
I don't want to look at you. I really want that candle that's on the table.
Is that a?
You can't see it anymore.
Is that a candle or is that a lamp? I thought they had lamps.
I suppose maybe it is, but I'd want a candle version. It's just really cool.
See, okay, this is another thing. It's like Tuvok is still Tuvok.
Yes, he is. Well, and speaking of earrings, I just noticed Kate Mulgrew, Janeway's character, is wearing earrings. Meaning her ears are pierced, too. And here's Chakotay, making his first appearance in this episode with Tommy.
With that 1940s part down the side of his hair?
Yes. You gotta love that.
So funny. And, okay, I am so glad that they put Tom Paris on the Allied side.
Yeah, I can't imagine him being on the other side, can you?
You know, yeah, I guess I said that wrong. I'm so glad that they made him an American soldier and not a French resistance fighter because,
yeah.
Like, even though his last name is Paris, he is so hardcore 1940s soldier.
Yeah, he's very Americanized.
Yeah, this is, it was just so perfect.
Yes, I love it. Nice canteen.
I'm always a fan of, in seeing this in TV and movies and historical photographs, of the commander's tent.
Yeah?
I love seeing how they decorate it. Do they decorate it? Is it just for functionality? How long they've been on the front? You know, that kind of thing. And yeah, it always interests me.
I suppose that would be interesting because as time goes by, I wonder if there's certain things that, in general, tend to show you how long they've been out there and like how things are going.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's one thing about history that really fascinates me.
Me too.
Is watching that progression. And apparently Chakotay has an affinity for maps because that's all that's on his wall.
Ah, very important. Oh, okay. So, okay. I love spy gear. I love, you know, like, I love it when in movies, like, because this feels like a 1940s movie. Like, this is what they would wear in a 1940s movie. And that's what I really appreciate in this episode is that would they wear this in the 1940s? Maybe, maybe not. But they definitely would wear it in a 1940s movie.
You know, I think you're right. And then the spy gear. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's spy gear. And what they're wearing for the listeners at home is we see Janeway and Tuvok and Seven. They're in all black and they're wearing black turtlenecks like they're in an episode of Archer.
Yeah.
It just works.
I love it. Yes, yes, and they've got top secret weapons. I mean, they're kind of pulling, not quite James Bond level here, but they got some tricks up their sleeve. I like that.
Yeah, but yeah. Janeway still has her jacket on. Like, it's not just a turtleneck. She has a black jacket on. Like, I think her character is very much for the tux.
Yeah, yeah, that really, I don't know, that just says Janeway for me.
It's very commanding. You know, it's like, I'm wearing the jacket. I have the shoulder pads.
Yeah, that's right. I'm wearing the pants. Poor Harry. He's got a rip in his uniform. He's dirty. He looks like he hasn't showered in about a week.
See, that's the thing that I've always kind of wondered about is that, is like, so is it against the rules to shower on the Hirogen Voyager ship?
Well, you'd imagine that, well, I don't know. You could think of it in two ways. Like, if you haven't showered, you're going to kind of build up a little bit of BO. Does that make you more susceptible to your prey? Because they can smell you?
Well, there you go. Or it's just they want to divert all possible energy towards the holodex, and they can't do it towards sonic showers.
Yeah, and it's like it's a use of power that's inefficient. It's not necessary.
Yeah. Look how much taller these Hirogen are than Garrett Wong. They were able to find some gigantic actors for the Hirogen parts.
Yes, in this day and age, these version of Hirogen were. Yeah, they got the really big guys, and the Voyager cast, by and large, I mean, the guys especially, they're all pretty tall.
Yeah.
So these guys had to be basketball player size, practically.
Yeah, like, besides Ethan Phillips, like, all of them are pretty tall. Like,
yeah.
Ethan Phillips is shorter, and I think the Doc, he's just average height. I think he's, like, my height.
Like, what, 5'10"?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 5'10".
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, Robert Beltran, I think he's over 6 feet.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, besides those two, all the other guys are much taller.
But, yeah. Yeah, they're all fairly tall, which is why Janeway had to wear those ginormous heels so she could look them in the eye instead of looking up all the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes.
So she wore heels?
Well, she wore pretty big heels. And they might have even broken out the box for her to stand on so she could be eye to eye with Chakotay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's very common practice, like, for people listening. That's very common practice in video production, TV and film, is it's called an apple box, where
that's right.
They have the shorter person, like, when they need to have a conversation in a close up in a two shot, and a two shot is two characters in one shot. Sometimes it can be severely awkward because, like, they used it a lot in The X-Files, where Duchovny's like 6 foot two or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And Gillian Anderson's 5 foot five, if anything.
Not even. No, she's more like my height. She's 5'3", if that.
Yeah. And so that's really awkward when you're trying, like, you can't get that close when the height is that different. And so you put them on boxes so that you cheat their height. And then that way you can get closer with the camera.
Yeah, and then it's more intense. And for Janeway, that does make some sense because, I mean, you can't have her looking up to her first officer and giving orders. You know, that's that balance of power kind of a thing. It's got to be obvious that she's the one in charge.
There was, in House of Cards, there's the Linda Velasquez, who's the secretary chief, is the chief of staff.
Uh-huh.
And she's a very, very short woman. And there's always tons and tons of men who tower over her. But every single time she's in the room, she's the one commanding the room. And I always appreciate that because I never noticed her ever being on an apple box or anything like that. Like, she's this tiny person, but you were scared of her because of what she could do to you.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, do not underestimate short women.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, this moment coming up is one of my favorite moments of Kim. Like, is it over the top? Yes, but I don't care. Because he gets caught by the Hirogen trying to sabotage, and he just screams, "Go to hell!"
I like that, too. But, I mean, really, if he wanted to be a little more discreet, I mean, he's, like, looking back at them constantly because they're on the bridge while he's tapping control panels. I mean, just pretend like you're doing your thing, buddy.
I know. It's like that when in every single spy movie, they hold their fingers to their ear to hear the device.
No.
It's like, hear it without pushing it into your ear. There was a James Bond movie, I think Casino Royale, where a spy was doing that, and James Bond had his arms crossed. He's like, "Take your hand away from your ear."
Exactly. Yeah, you got to be more discreet than that. You know, this is one of the few times where I actually like guns on Voyager. Well, in Star Trek.
What? Like,
just
instead of phasers?
Seeing guns,
what?
Using guns. I mean, not phasers, actual guns that we have.
Okay.
Like, it just, in a way, it kind of goes against the whole Gene Roddenberry happy vision of the future. Guns don't necessarily have a place with that. But in this instance, yeah, makes it work. Oh, there's Neelix the Klingon.
He makes such a great Klingon.
He really does. That's one of my favorite things about this two-parter is Neelix hanging with Klingons. And unfortunately, we're not going to get to the good stuff till part two.
Yeah. Janeway has a very distinct pain noise.
Yeah, she kind of does. You know what I'm talking about? It sounds sort of like she's suffocating.
Yeah, it sounds like she's suffocating and sometimes, and I'm going to keep it clean, not always in pain. Like, like it's a mix of all three.
It could be misinterpreted that way, yeah, yes.
Yeah, like there's just a few times when she sounds like she might be enjoying herself. I don't know. We'll leave it at that. Yeah, we'll leave it at
that. Some people are into that stuff, and I'm not judging.
What did I say about it? We'll leave it at that.
Fine. I'm done.
All right, so like here are the Americans that come in to save the day late, as always.
Well, of course. It is the American way. Well, the Americans kind of were late to the party.
Yeah, absolutely. And oh, I love it. I love hearing Janeway say, the Americans have arrived. Oh, no, it was Seven. Seven, yes. Saying, the Americans have arrived.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought this whole structure was so fantastic. Everything about this, because like in this episode, we established the premise. Everybody thinks that they're someone that they're not. We go through the simulation. We notice what story is being established. It's something we've never seen on Star Trek before. And then at the very end, bam, everything changes. Nothing's going to be the same. The proverbial crap has hit the proverbial fan. and then right when we want to see more, it goes, bam, to be continued.
Yes. In fact, I would say this is one of the most solid two-parter Star Trek has ever done.
Absolutely.
It is that good, even compared to Year of Hell. This is right up there still.
I think this is one of those episodes that everyone says it's good, but I don't think they recognize how good it actually
is. Yeah,
it
gets overlooked because of Year of Hell. Now, I love this shot.
Yeah,
that explosion. I would have loved to have been on set with that shot, because apparently Jerry Ryan and Kate Mulgrew, they run and then they dive onto these crash pads as they go off camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then the explosion, of course, is green screened in. It's a cool shot.
Yeah, it's a very cool shot. It's the Nazi headquarters were exploded, and then that opens up a hole into Voyager, where we actually see the decks.
Yeah, which we've not really seen before, and that's also a very striking visual. That's cool.
Yeah, it's like a cutaway that you see on those posters where it's a starship poster.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you see like a cross section. That's the word I was looking for.
That's
a cross section
word.
Of the ship. Mm-hmm. That's what you're seeing right now in the holodeck. And you actually see, this shows you how tall the holodeck actually is.
Right. Yeah.
And it kind of makes you wonder, does the holodeck really need to be that tall?
Well, remember, this is also a very enhanced holodeck, because Harry has converted so much of the ship into more holodeck space. So are we seeing the actual holodeck or the expanded holodeck?
Well, see, I don't know if they'd be able to change the structure of the ship, but I feel like they would just be able to add more holodeck emitters to different rooms, like cargo bays and certain hallways and things like that, maybe even a shuttle bay. So I feel like this is actually how tall a holodeck actually is.
I don't know. I mean, maybe for a full landscape experience, it does have to be that tall, but I don't know. I'm no expert on those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That is the credit sequence, and so that is part one. And if you thought you were going to do part one and part two in this episode, how foolish are you?
Gotcha.
Gotcha. But you will hear it next week, we promise. We're not going to make you wait a long time. It's not going to be a couple weeks from now. It's going to be next week. We're going to do part two.
Yes, we're going to take care of that, but The Killing Game is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain.
Is
so,
it our birthday?
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is like paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
Eh, see ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
At this point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
one of the most well thought out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct, because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, yeah, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie, is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available wherever you can get your podcasts. None of them would be possible without the help of a sponsor, and so let's hear about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Before we go, we do have an iTunes review to acknowledge. And I'm not sure what in the world is up with this username, but it's somebody who goes by But It Doesn't. It's whoever wrote this, gave us a review, a 5-star rating, helps us out with the rankings and iTunes, helps other people find the podcast, and therefore, you rock. If you haven't written a review for us and you would like to, you know what to do. We'll give you a shout out on the show if you do that. Now, if you're not in the U.S. and you write a review in iTunes, please let us know that you did, so that we can check a non-U.S. iTunes store, because we have to manually do that and we don't always go through that. And then that way we'll acknowledge you on the show as well. If you'd like to support our network on Trek FM here, we have a Patreon.com account. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber. We have various levels of contribution, and it all helps us out tremendously, because it does cost money to distribute and store all of these podcasts that we have coming out to you each and every week. Any and all help is appreciated. We'd like to thank our associate producer, Lisa Stevens. You can follow her on Twitter at Flip18. So give her a follow and thank her for supporting To the Journey. So as we mentioned, next week is Killing Game Part 2. So, until next week, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!